Broadcasting from the University City, we are Cambridge 105.
What sparked your passion for cooking?
I have a good appetite and I eat.
I'll often make subtle changes to the next batch of it.
As long as it has room to move around, it's classified as free range.
So my mother gave me a crash course in cookery when I was 16.
I remember sampling this amazing drink, thinking how I've never tasted coffee this good.
Which homemade desserts can be cheaper than shop-bought alternatives?
We want people to feel at home.
Good afternoon and welcome to Flavour, your fortnightly food and drink programme for Cambridge with Matt Bentman and Ruth Reyes. No Alan Alder today, he's in Portugal having a great time and visiting the Festival of Sardines. Sounds fishy. But he's provided us with plenty of features so you'll still hear his voice.
Many thanks to Brian O'Reilly for the last 2 hours of music. Coming up on today's programme, there's a new sweet shop in town, Canesmith. From soy and sesame to beer and peanut, find out all about Canesmith and their interesting combinations.
And there's a new brewery in town, Calverley's, who have flung open their doors to the public. And if you live on Mill Road, they're just a hop, skip and a jump away.
Hop, very good. Staying on Mill Road, there was a food feast the other week, which gave Matt an opportunity to catch up with the cutting edge of the Cambridge street food scene.
Dave Fox from Trumpington Allotments brings us some timely tips for June, and Nazima Pathan from Frongley Kitchen discusses all things broad beans.
Whilst Noel Young from Noel Young Wines in Trumpington Street takes us through his Wines of the Month mix case. And of course, we'll have the food and drink news at the end of the programme. So, let's begin.
Mill Road Butchers is situated on the corner of Mill Road and Devonshire Road next to the bridge. Previously, it used to be called Andrew Northrup's, and prior to that, it was run by a Polish man called Mr. Fabish. A local police officer who used to patrol Mill Road in the 80s told me that he still remembers Fabish's pies and haslets. So, what's a haslet, Ruth?
Haslets are a kind of meatloaf consisting of minced pork, kidney, liver and lungs, stale white bread and plenty of herbs.
Well, the current proprietor of Mill Road Butchers is Gary Howlett. I stopped by this week to have a butcher's and meet Gary and one of his team to see which direction they'll be taking this long-standing establishment and ask him briefly about its past, starting with Mr. Fabish.
Yeah, I remember coming here late 80s, early 90s to the shop because he was, as far as I knew, the original butcher here. He owned the premises. He handed it over to Mr. Northrup in 99, but he was certainly a good character. He had a very good window display. He had local produce and using the amenities around him. And then when Mr. Northrup took over, I think he was here for nearly 15 years.
Mill Road, again, it's been a butcher's shop as long as anyone can remember. We took it on in June 1999.
So from the early 2000s, right up to when Andrew left, and we'd done a handover between him and myself here in the shop on a Monday morning, and we started off on a new adventure. Daniel, his youngest son, was quite surprised when I asked him to stay on. I think it was really important that his dad had put so much hard work into the shop over 15 years, along with, you know, the other members of staff like Martin and Kevin. You know, I thought it was important that Daniel had that opportunity to stay on with us. But thankfully, when I asked him, he agreed and came on board. So hopefully, you know, there'll be a Northrop here for another 15 years or more.
Now, one thing I picked up on was the tweet you made around about this time last year. And it was, if I can't live in the countryside, I'll bring the countryside to me. Butchery by day, grower by evening. Is that still true now?
It is, yeah. I'm fortunate enough to own an allotment not too far from here on Coldens Lane. We do a lot of stuff down there. And then I do a lot of work with local farmers, hands-on with Dingley Dell out in Suffolk and Norfolk Quail and various other guys in our area to keep the produce that we use here in the shop within what I call the home counties of Essex, Suffolk, Norfolk, Hertfordshire and a little bit of Lincoln.
Hello, my name's Harriet. I'm from Hackney in London and we're in Mill Road Butchers. I started in a butcher's in London just before my 17th birthday and I actually only left just to come to Anglia Ruskin Uni.
And what was it like working in the butcher's in Hackney compared to here?
Very different, very fast-paced, quite heated sometimes, especially around Christmas. And there's a lot more of us. There's about six of us on a weekend, whereas here, me and Gary can just do it together. Learning the right cuts was from my last butchers, definitely. So when I came here, I was basically prepared to serve and tell people about the meat as well. But here I learned actually how to carve the meat properly.
And what's it like working with Gary?
I like working with Gary. He's really laid back, but I don't take the mick out of him. Like, he's really good to work with, though.
Are you happy with everything that's said there? Is there anything extra?
I think so, apart from where I kept stumbling and pausing, but, you know.
That can all be fixed up.
Yeah.
You sound like a posh boy once he's edited it.
I know.
Sound like someone from Made in Chelsea.
Everyone's going to be like, what's going on?
It's all right, they're blamed. I think it's Dan.
Yeah. So our steak is from Suffolk. T-bone, ribeye, fillet, sirloin. They have a very nice... marbling, yeah. Especially the ribeye, which is my personal favourite. Yeah, and sometimes we get in some Wagyu. We had some from Chile, which is very expensive, but it's worth the money. I mean, it's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity.
Wagyu beef, you were describing that it's quite exclusive.
Yeah, I mean, Wagyu, it's a type of cow, and they feed it beer, and they stroke it and kind of massage it. It's a very weird process, but if you get the chance, definitely try it.
All of our sausages are made on site, apart from one or two brands that we buy in, like Newmarket, for example. But we've got our own guy here who has been making sausages in Cambridge for the last 20, 30 years. His name is Greg Biggs. The varieties go from our standard Cumberland right through to venison, wild boar, battalion, Old Smoky, which is one of the big favourites on the Milroy Winter Fair. I think it's the biggest selling sausage on that fair. Yeah, all our gammons and all the bacon is made here on site. We do a smoked bacon on smoked, and we're doing a treacle and a sweet smoked at the moment, which is becoming very popular. You can't even keep up at the moment with the demand on it.
Treacle really and sweet smoked bacon.
Yeah.
That sounds lovely.
Yeah, it is. I was just making some now.
Are you?
Yeah, and we provide it for Hot Numbers, Black Cat, loads, so we just pump it out like twice a week.
Urban Larder have just started taking it off of us. Black Cat are selling it in both their shops. They're doing the on-smoked one in town, and they're doing the sweet one here in Guider Street on Mill Road. And also Jim, who's a chef down at the Clarendon, has recently been buying some Dingley Dell smoked bacon off of us. We prepare specially for him.
There seems to be a lot of fashion kicking off with smoked bacon. They're even combining it with waffles and ice cream these days, whereas previous years it would have been all about beetroot. This year it seems to be a lot about combinations of bacon with things.
People can experiment much more with bacon, especially as bacon isn't as expensive as beef and lamb. You know, and there's so many different varieties out there now in the region using Dingley Dell or Old Spot or various other local farms in and around Cambridge. And I think with, you know, everybody wanting a more local product, and butchers are sort of competing against the supermarkets to make sure that we provide something that you can't buy in the supermarket. And I think that just drives the competition between us all, really, to produce new products and our customers try new products. How much bacon do you think that you cut per week at the moment?
Oh, I don't know. I've just done the loins, and they're... How big is that?
You're looking at 2.5-3 kilo piece?
Yeah. And I've just done 18 of those.
Would it surprise you to tell you that there's 120 kilo of it that you're slicing at the moment?
Thanks, Gary. Makes you feel a lot better.
Yep. And we can just about keep up by doing that.
Yeah, so we started doing bread about 3 months ago from Norfolk Street Bakery, because on Mill Road there is no bakery, which I think is ridiculous. How is there no bakery on High Street? So, yeah, we tried to incorporate their business into ours so people could grab loads of things, including their bread, because we do meat, eggs, Mrs. North's eggs, which is in Hertfordshire.
And we're using various different suppliers, hopefully coming on board with the Cambridge Juice Company to sell their products as well. So elderflower is one of the biggest things that we're looking at. To go with people that more likely are not going to buy wine or drink beer with a meal, they might want a nice bottle of apple juice or beetroot juice or something for cooking with. We use several different products from all around. Our sausages and things that we make, we use ingredients from Alamin. We're constantly working with the guys around us, with Black Cat, the Urban Larder, right through down to Garden Kitchen. They're going to be hopefully doing some sausage rolls and things for us for here in the shop. We were also providing Hot Numbers with pastrami that we were making here in the shop. And go for it.
Yeah, pulled pork, we supplied them with that. We even cooked it for them as well.
I just think it's important to work with the local businesses around you, because business is the same as community. If everybody is united, then we all prosper. Being selfish in business, I think that's the thing of the past. And now it's about working with each other, grow our own businesses. We are hopefully building ourselves up to sell a lot of Spanish deli stuff, which we're getting direct from Spain, basically using all of the chorizos and all of their beans, right through to Parma ham, garlic and onions, really building up our Spanish side of things, because there's a lot of great delis in Cambridge when it comes to buying Italian produce, but I don't believe that there's that many around that are catering for the Spanish community of Cambridge, and we're hoping to become more of a hub for those guys to be able to come down and buy the produce that they see in their own delis back home in Spain. Yeah, so hopefully we are going to be renovating the shop, so the shop becomes twice the size it is now, just to give us more fridge space and allow us to do more of our Spanish meats, a sort of full range of deli stuff in a cabinet, hams and things where customers can come in and we can cut what they want, rather than at the moment we're having to vacuum pack it to protect it and keep it, because we have such a small space here that we can't really put cooked meats and raw meats together. So we're going to have all our new fridges underground so that it's just more environmentally friendly, and we'll have a cooked room so that it's just cooking going on in there, and we've got a raw room, so we're completely separating everything up, which then gives us the ability to make all our own pies, all our own sausage rolls. We're hoping for the work to be done January, February next year. We're just waiting at the moment for planning permission to be approved. Yeah, I mean, we can really sort of go for it.
I noticed that neither of you really have traditional Cambridge accents. You're both a little bit more of a London twang.
Yeah, definitely. This is my accent right now. It's not really strong, but I'm going home tomorrow and the accent will be proper London.
I know I'm from, like, the posh part of Greenwich, and you're from, like, you know,
the ghetto,
as we put it. But
it's a bit different.
And you worked at the butchers in Hackney as well.
Yeah, I mean, the type of customers you get in, like, from all over the nooks and crannies of the world, people from Africa, people from Australia, New Zealand, people from up north, down south, all over the place.
But Cambridge is a very international place as well. Do you get lots of people coming in asking for very unusual cuts of meat, or being very inquisitive and testing your metal and seeing the variety that you've got?
Yeah, definitely. When I first came to Cambridge in the 90s, I must admit, you know, I just left school and I hated it. You know, it was like a little village. I grew up in London, but just this style of life that Cambridge gives you, and it attracts so many people from all over the world, and they come into the shop, whether they're Brazilian or Spanish or French, German, and they're constantly sort of hitting us with the exact same cuts of meat, but in their country the description is different. You know, they could stand there for 5 minutes and ask me for something and I haven't got a clue. But suddenly I realise that they want sirloin steak, or they want picanha from the rump. So, yeah, you know, we're constantly... Every day's a school day, I think. Yeah. Every day.
Even in my old show, it was like that. We had a lot of Vietnamese customers, and then one day someone came in and just wrote down what certain cuts were, like belly. I think belly is bachi. So if someone came in and said bachi, we knew exactly what they meant, and it actually helped a great deal.
We need to have a blackboard.
Especially the Spanish.
We need an international blackboard so people can just point at what they want.
Yeah.
All right, well, Gary and Harriet of the Mill Road Butchers, thank you very much.
All right, thank you very much.
You're welcome, thank you.
And you're listening to Flavour on Cambridge 105.
I think we're the oldest butchers now on Mill Road. It's been traditional butchers here on this corner for 100 years or more. And hopefully in 100 years' time, we'll still have a butchers here on the corner of Devonshire Road, Mill Road.
You were listening to Gary Howlett and Harriet Thompson of Mill Road Butchers. We wish them all the best for their upcoming refurbishment, which will see them fitted out with a roar and a cooked room. And it should really transform what Mill Road Butchers will be able to provide as it moves into a more butcher-stroke-deli space. Mill Road Butchers, they trade in local produce, so any questions you have about any aspects of the supply, they will be knowledgeable.
They're open Monday to Saturday. You can call them on Cambridge 354-779, and you can follow them on Twitter at Mill Road Butcher.
And we know they're listening at the moment, so hello to Gary, Harriet and Dan, and we hope you keep listening at home too, because there's plenty more to come on today's Flavour.
At Cambridge 105, we're proud to be out and about in our city. If you've got a local event coming up and you'd like us to be part of it, drop your details over to publicity@cambridge105.fm. Cambridge 105, the station that cares the most about the community.
We heard on Flavour recently about the new Cambridge brewery called Calverley's. Now, they started opening on the brewery at 24A Hooper Street on a Saturday, so you can buy their beers direct. Alan went along last weekend shortly after their first opening.
Sam, so here we are in your shop, in yes. the brewery.
Our exciting opening day, and we've already had a few customers.
And what are you selling today? What's this beer I have in front of me?
This one is our latest offering, which is a Citra and Simcoe Pale Ale, 4.5% ABV, and it just really, I suppose, it showcases the Simcoe as a dry hop. I mean, Citra's in there, and obviously as well. As a dry hop, but it's really nice to showcase that hop.
It's a lovely beer, actually. I had a well-known mass-produced beer the other night and was shocked by how dreadful it tasted. I'm too used to drinking small breweries' quality beers, I think. Will this be on next week, which is the week of our programme?
Yes, I think next week we will put Citra Simcoe as one of our beers of the day, and depending on how busy we are today, we'll put another beer on as well.
Maybe our best bitter.
Yeah, possibly the best bitter. Mm-hmm. But if next weekend is like this weekend and glorious sunshine, then I think that the pale ale is probably the ideal accompaniment to a lovely sunny day.
Very possible.
Yeah, for a barbecue or.
You're not terribly easy to find. Are you going to put out some guidance on how to?
I think next week we need to put some firkins at the end of Hooper Street, some empty beer barrels, and get our board pointing people in the direction.
And you're opening gradually, because you did say when we talked to you last that you might start offering food.
We've just got to take it one step at a time, and to begin with, our concept is simple. We've got fresh cask beer straight from the brewery. That's how we're starting.
Well, tell me about the volumes we can buy it in.
Anything from 2 pints up to an entire 72 pint firkin if you want.
But we have carry kegs of 4 pints and 8 pints and 2 pints and boxes.
Tom, could you remind me of the opening times?
11 till 4 on Saturday.
That's nice and simple, isn't it? OK, well, we wish you luck and we hope to hear from you again as the offer increases.
Brilliant.
That was Sam and Tom Calverley from the Calverley Brewery. And as they said, they're open now at 24A Hooper Street and they're going to be there today until 4 p.m. It's well worth a visit, and if you're into good beer, you won't be disappointed.
You're listening to Flavour on Cambridge 105.
Now, this may be surprising, but I don't have a huge sweet tooth. Of course, this doesn't mean I don't love sweets. I just prefer salty and umami flavours. So when I heard about Cane Smith, a new gourmet confectioner's with a soy and sesame caramel, launching later this month, I had to know more.
I'm here with Laura Brown, who just started Cane Smith & Co.
Yes, that's right.
Which is a new sweets company, which I'm very excited about. Why did you decide to start it?
Well, I was on maternity leave with my third child and decided I didn't fancy going back to the city and working in finance, doing something that, you know, I could do for a while but wasn't particularly loving. So, yeah, just decided I wanted to work in food because I'm complete food obsessive. Did a bit of research about what was going on in sort of other markets. I looked at the States and there's quite a lot of premium confectionery going on over there. And I thought, well, that's quite interesting, and I've got a massive sweet tooth. So I ordered loads of that, ate my way through it very quickly, and then tried to find something similar over here and couldn't really. Bought myself a saucepan and a thermometer. And that was it, yeah, just tried to make some good sweets. And here we are.
Amazing. So will you be in delis? Will you be in markets? Are you online?
Yeah, so I'll be online hopefully by the end of this month. So I've been working on putting together my website, canesmith.com, and yeah, delis and local shops, that's the plan. I haven't approached too many yet, but once I'm actually live, then I'll feel like I can approach people more formally.
So your sweets are all very different. The one that had is the peppermint and saltwater taffy and soy and sesame. How do you come up with these ideas?
It was really around trying to make sweets that weren't too sweet, were a bit more interesting, I guess, and a bit more complicated. So obviously everyone knows about salted caramel, everyone's obsessed by it. So the soy and sesame really came off the back of that, and I was thinking, well, how can I get that saltiness into the caramel? And so I experimented with a few different soy sauces and ended up with finding the right one. And then the sesame, again, just giving a real proper sort of savouriness to it. And the saltwater taffy came about because years ago, watching Sex and the City, and Carrie Bradshaw's eating saltwater taffy in some episode, which I can't quite remember something about, gambling. And I just thought, well, that's, you know, Nutri Sweet, it's not over here. Let's have a go, find out how to make it. And yeah, many tries later, had something that was worth actually trying. And there we are. Lots of different inspiration, really. One of the things I'm trying to do is also use really good ingredients, trying to get things from good suppliers locally where I can. So cream from, you know, like Suffolk Dairy, and the beer is from Elgood's local brewery. So, yeah, as far as I can, just trying to get those, you know, really top quality ingredients just to try and make the sweets the best tasting I can. A little bit of experimentation and a bit of a guess.
Yeah, like most things.
Yeah. Yes.
Which one was your favourite?
Ooh. I love the soy and sesame. I'm really, really proud of that one. I think people are always surprised when they try it. And the same is true, really, with the beer and peanut. It isn't like a sweet you'll have had before because of the bitterness. But the one I was really pleased with nailing was the spearmint saltwater taffy, because I was obsessed with Pacers when I was younger, which were a big sweet in the 1980s. Well, anyway, they were a big sweet to me. And it's almost as close as I could get to doing that, but with a bit of salt in it. So I was quite chuffed when I got that one right, because I eat a lot of that now.
So how long have you been doing the sweets then?
Since kind of October last year was when I really started to think, okay, this might be something serious. I was actually thinking, looking at names and so on and so on. But really, January was when it really started to escalate. So I finalised the name, got into the designer, sent samples off to friends to try. Yeah, so since then, so June is, you know, the sort of launch, like going live. But obviously we did Eat Cambridge on the 23rd of May, which was amazing. Great to have people trying sweets, yeah. And giving feedback, particularly people that I'm not related to. And that was brilliant. And it was good feedback. It was really, really satisfying.
Yeah.
It made you feel like you were actually really doing this.
Oh, that's really good. I'm very excited. Twitter was alive with your name for a little while.
I was like, ooh. Oh, exciting.
Brilliant. Well, thank you very much, Laura.
Oh,
it was
pleasure.
Good chatting.
Yeah, good to speak to you.
They are really tasty and unusual, which is refreshing in a sweet, not your average Haribo. I brought in a few earlier. What did you think of them, Matt?
Well, I'm trying the soy and the sesame, which is Laura Brown's favourite, and it's gorgeous. I didn't like the initial bite, but the flavour straight afterwards, it's so addictive. And they're not too chewy. You know, I was worried because I have a few fillings then it might pull them out. But no, this is just the right consistency for me. That's, I could really get through good. A pack of these.
Believe me, it was really hard keeping a few back for you. Keep an eye out on Laura Brown by following at The Kane Smith on Twitter and Instagram to see some of more of what she'll have in store. Because it's not just those flavours, she's got tons. Mm. The online shop should be launching very soon, unless I buy everything first, of course. And also now a tweet from the Black Cat Cafe. They've got hot and spicy Mexican eggs on today.
Lovely. Now, Mill Road Feast is a pop-up food market. It happens every 3 months. It's full of local and seasonal produce from vendors, and you can find them either online or appearing elsewhere in the city. I spoke first with the organiser, Kerry Littlechild.
So my name is Kerry Littlechild and I work for Cambridge City Council as Mill Road Coordinator, and part of my duties includes arranging the Mill Road Feast, which is our quarterly pop-up market. We've done it in a few locations around Mill Road. Today we're back at Guider Street and the sun is shining and everyone's having a lovely time, so I'm really happy about that. Yeah, I think it's just a good opportunity for local people to come out. It's an opportunity as well for people who don't come from this area to come and see it, see what it's all about, because that's part of the reason why we did the feast. It's about like offering somewhere for local people to trade, but also for encouraging visitors to Mill Road, because it's an amazing part of the city. Yeah, this food fair, you can find more information online at www.millroadfeast.com, and it happens every 3 months in March, June and September, and then obviously in December we have our massive Mill Road Winter Fair, and we do have ambitions to grow a summer fair as well. So this year we're just looking at setting up a few little market areas. We'll have an evening feast here in Guider Street with a bar. Oh, and we'll have like music and dance in Argyle Street housing co-op car park. So it's going to start small, but hopefully it'll grow year on year and eventually become as big and as wonderful as the Mill Road Winter Fair.
You mentioned the evening,
yes.
The evening market. Would that happen here on Guido Street
yes.
as well?
Yeah. That is going to be Saturday, July the 18th. I welcome applications from any food traders around Cambridge and around sort of the East Anglia region. I mean, we do have a lot of regulars. Some of the traders here have come from the city centre market, or they have stalls at the city centre as well. What I was really keen on that we've got today is a vegan and vegetarian trader, which is really good. The Wandering Yak, the food is just absolutely fantastic. And we also have fresh veg grown locally, dynamic organics. And I'm really keen to get local people involved. So if anybody wants to trade at Emerald Feast, they just need to get in touch with me.
Thank you very much,
Karen. Yeah.
Three feasts, an evening market and the winter fair. It feels like a momentum is really gathering in the street food and fair scene in Cambridge. Kerry mentioned in that clip how nice it was to have the Wandering Yak on site that day. The Wandering Yak are a street food van offering vegetarian and vegan food, and they featured on Flavour a few episodes ago when they launched in Cambridge.
And although this event happened only last week, the vendors are local and you can still find their products and produce today and most every day. So here's a little flavour of people that were selling that day, starting with someone that we've mentioned recently in our news section.
I'm Rob from the OO Company. OO stands for Original Olive Oil. It's also the sound you make when you try it, which is a bit cheesy, but it always puts a smile on people's face. Now, what we do is we sell olive oil from my partner Pam's family farm in Cyprus. So our olive oil comes direct from the farm. There's no middleman. I go over there myself and I help out with the harvest, so I know exactly what's gone in the bottles. And in short, what grew on the trees went in the bottles, and that's the end of the story. Nobody's messed about with it. That's why it tastes as good as it does. We also now have fantastic olives and halloumi cheese direct from the makers in Cyprus.
Whenever people say they're not an olive fan, I find that unbelievable, really. I think you can be not an olive oil fan, not an olive fan necessarily if you've tried the supermarket olives. There's a world of difference between what they're selling and what you're selling.
Yeah, we get it all the time. I get people saying, oh, I love olives, but I hate olive oil. Aren't I weird? And I say to them, well, not really, because, like you said, if you buy it from the supermarket, you don't quite know what you're getting. You're buying something, you don't get a chance to try it, so you're always taking a gamble. And by the time you get home, you've already paid your money and you decide you don't like it, it's too late. You can take it back, but you're probably not going to. When you come to a market or an event like this, you get the chance to try things and then you can decide if you like it or not. Invariably, you're going to like what's here because people put passion into what they're doing. It's the real McCoy. It's food from the makers. There's no middleman, no wholesaler. It's just direct from the maker. And that's what people want these days.
What have people been most attracted to on your stall here today?
Okay, so for the first year that we were in business, we only had olive oil. And albeit people loved the olive oil, it's quite restrictive. So quite recently, we got our halloumi cheese direct from the makers of a lovely family in Cyprus, and we got some lovely, fantastic olives from another supplier in Cyprus as well. And our olives are going down a treat these days. They're vacuum sealed at the factory, so the freshness is sealed in and it comes over to us in that way. So because they're vacuum sealed, there's a long sell-by date. People can just throw it in their handbag without worrying about it spilling. And when they get home, if they haven't eaten it already on the bus or whatever, they can just throw it in the cupboard until they want to use it. So our olives go down really well. We've got six different flavours, so there's something there for everybody.
What's the link between you and olives? Because you don't sound particularly Greek. You don't look like you have any Greek origins.
Well spotted. My partner, Pam, is from Cyprus. She was born in Cyprus, brought up in London, like me. And her family are over there. So Pam's dad sorts out all the Cyprus end of the business for us. But it's her uncle that produces the olive oil. Her uncle's the farmer, and that's how we go over there and we help out with the harvest. So that explains the link. But sometimes I wish I had a cardboard cutout of Pam so I could say, there's the missus, and that's why I'm doing this.
And could we also just describe some of the different flavours of olive oil you have here?
Well, we've got some flavoured oils coming and they'll be ready soon. Basil, garlic and chilli. We'll be doing them as gift packs and they'll be fantastic for Christmas. Three little flavours, basil, garlic, chilli in a gift pack. £10 Christmas present, perfect.
Lovely, thank you very much, Rob.
No problem, thanks Matt, all the best.
And that was Rob Marsden from the OO Company, Original Olive Oil. You can find out more about his products by visiting his site, oocompany.com.
Next up is a name somewhat familiar to Flavour listeners.
So my name's Tyler Cotton and I run Dynamic Organics. We've got a few fresh vegetables here, radish, rainbow chard, salad mix and some coriander. Just trying to sell it here at the Mill Road Feast, which
All grown locally, isn't it?
Very locally. Over in Barton. It's the first kind of thing like this outside of the Mill Road Winter Fair, so I understand.
And the weather's perfect, and it's good, isn't it? Very busy.
It's not as big as the Mill Road Winter Fair. Obviously, you've been mum before, when it goes all the way down Mill Road and all the way up again, but hopefully it might grow to be something of a similar size. And
well, it's proving very popular, isn't it? I think people like the vegetables when they know it's organic or biodynamic and fresh and on display and picked sometimes this morning and sometimes picked yesterday, wasn't it? But people who come to these fairs are very aware of good food and how it's grown and fresh food, aren't they?
I think so, yeah.
And what do you have here today?
Okay, so I've got not a huge selection of stuff, but coriander. Got bunches of radish, cherry bell radish, which is quite a spicy radish, rainbow chards, and salad mix.
But the salad mix is quite special, isn't it?
Yes, if you say so.
Yeah, well, it is, because of the leaf mix that you've got in it. It's just all mixed for you, ready to go.
It's one of my things I'm more proud of, yeah. I'm proud of it all, obviously.
Radish seems like an unusual choice to put on the store here, because I wouldn't have thought many people would go for radish.
Actually, that's weird, because that's what we sold the most of today. Yeah.
But I agree with you, because I say to people, what are you going to do with it? Because I would just chop it into a salad. That's how limited my expertise is. But it's nice and peppery, isn't it?
Yeah, it's quite fiery. Yeah.
Adds a bit of spice to a salad.
And I've got a few heads of lettuce as well. But...
Look at that, beautifully. Perfect.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
From Dynamic Organics.
That's right.
Can people find you online as well?
Yes, they can. I've got Twitter. The handle is at Dynamic Organics, with a capital D and a capital O.
I was just wondering whether I could ask you as well, just what got you into it? Mm-hmm. Were you originally a woofer or anything like that?
Yeah, I was actually. Yeah, I went over to New Zealand to go and see my brother. And the first job I got over there when I settled in Wellington was in an organic store, and that's where I got interested in it. I didn't know anything about it really until I started working in this place on the fruit and vegetable section of the shop, and that's where the interest started. I heard about the biodynamic thing in it, and it really made a lot of sense. And then I went over to Australia, spent a year and a half working for that whole time on farms, and that's really where it began. And then I came back, and now I've got a 3 or 4 acre field out in Barton, so...
It's a passion.
I wouldn't be doing it if I hadn't found the biodynamic thing. I think if I hadn't found that, then I probably wouldn't just do organic growing. It's the biodynamics that I'm passionate about, so yeah.
You know, I tried some of their salad mix. It was lovely and fresh. No rocket. I'm not a fan of rocket. But here's something that I found out that day. I love little kitchen tricks, things that make life easier in the kitchen or help your food last longer. Well, Tyler's mum, she gave me the salad bag and she suggested I put kitchen towel in the bottom because that helps preserve the salad.
Did it work?
It did. And I'm going to keep on using it from now on. I had to tell her my trick, though. I heard this somewhere many years ago, how to stop your potatoes sprouting and shriveling. You simply put an apple in the bag.
Really?
Yeah. I do it all the time because I never get through my potatoes quickly enough. It does work. Potatoes love the company of an apple. And it's to do with the apple absorbing the moisture that causes the potatoes to sprout. And it's also to do with ethylene gas, which is produced by an apple. That's what the magic ingredient is that prevents the potatoes from sprouting.
Okay, well, apples, kitchen towels, I think you're straying off the point now, Matt. So let's get back to the Mill Road Feast. Here's a brief montage of what visitors thought of it all, how they heard about it, and what they tried.
So I've got 4 vegetarian samosas, a tropical smoothie, and a loaf of sourdough bread from the Earth's crust.
Yeah, we found out about it through Twitter. Just came down for a bit of a lunch break. Had a very good falafel wrap from the Wandering Yak. Perfect break, perfect sunshine, really.
I've got classic burger from the Stick and Honor van.
So we live on Mill Road and we came here for the Winter Festival, where Rebecca, my girlfriend, had a stall selling cupcakes. So we're still in touch with the organisers of that, and so we came down to see what's going on here. I think we're eyeing up the Scotch eggs at the moment.
I've seen this event on Facebook. There are plenty of local food as well as abroad, like Italian pizza, Italian cheese, Oriental food. I personally had a Scotch egg, which I've never tried before, and really good experience.
I did hear lots more positive comments about those Scotch eggs, so I had to go over and have a look, and that's when I met Daryl Haylett of the No. 12 Village Shop and Deli. I'd reached him just as he'd sold out. He was an exhausted chef, but a happy one.
So many people here, so busy.
You can see people are really into their food, really enjoying our Scotch eggs. Yeah, I hope to be back with many more.
Your van is this very distinctive lime. It's almost like a key lime pie.
Yeah, we didn't choose the colour. Beginning, I thought it was a bit leery, but actually, I quite like it. Quite used to it now. It certainly attracts attention wherever we go.
Street food vans in Cambridge are very, very distinctive. You've got the Steak and Honour vans, who have their red and white vans. There's the Wandering Yak, which just recently started up. The jet black with the lovely design graphics on the side. And again, your van, incredibly distinctive. You said it was this German model, yes?
Yeah, it's an East German Barkas. It's actually a two-stroke engine in it. So we've had to do a lot of work to it to get it to where it is today, in like a nice running van. But yeah, it gets us around.
And your plan ultimately is to perhaps turn this van into a vending van?
Yes, we're looking to definitely convert it over the next, well, probably over the winter period.
Lovely. Thank you very much, Daryl.
Okay, thank you very much.
Daryl is very keen to hop onto the bustling Cambridge street food scene. And if you check out his website, you'll find that he trained in the Marriott Hotel in Vienna. He's worked at the Old Bridge in Huntingdon. And he was a head chef at the George in Spaldwick, where he was awarded a main entry in the Good Food Guide. So you know those Scotch eggs have got some provenance.
Shame you didn't get to try any, really.
Yeah, bad timing, I'm afraid. And they were served with sweet potato fries too. And you know what those are like when they are just cooked to perfection.
Mm-hmm. The next Mill Road Feast will take place on Sunday the 6th of September, which may seem far off now, but it'll be here in a flash. In the meantime, as Kerry said, there will be an evening feast on Saturday, July 18th, which will also include a bar and music too. It should make for a wonderful evening out.
Yes, and fingers crossed that we get that summer food fair.
Join me, Phil Rowe, for Sunday breakfast from 8 till 11 for some relaxing music, interviews with local people, newspaper and sports reviews, and the now legendary Cambridge Quiz. A great way to start your Sunday. Community radio in your city, Cambridge 105.
Mid-June is a busy time if you grow your own fruit and veg. And if you'd like to, but haven't done anything about it, it's not too late. Here's Dave Fox from Trumpington Allotments with some timely tips.
So here we've got a double row of beetroot, and there's some plants that are 8-10 centimetres high, looking quite healthy, but there's only about 8 of them. And I think what's happened here is that my early sowing, 2 full rows of beetroot, has been eaten by something, quite possibly slugs or snails. So I've re-sown, and this is something to look out for at this time of year. If you've had an early sowing fail for whatever reason, bad seed or eaten by pests, it's not too late at all to re-sow, fill in the gaps and use your land. So don't give up just because the crop's lost. It's still warm, the days are still lengthening.
Yeah.
So get in there. Yes, if you've got any gaps in your garden, any bare soil, don't leave bare soil. It's gonna get covered in weeds and leave you a problem. So another crop, a catch crop, a fast growing crop, or a green manure, which is going to add fertility to the soil, or some wild flowers. It's not too late at all to sow flowers, which are going to attract bees and other beneficial insects. So don't leave any bare soil. Have a look round, see a bare soil, and have a think about what you can plant or sow there.
Right.
So we're getting the first crops of all sorts of things, broad beans, salads, overwintered onions, and I suggest you pick them young, because then they're at their tenderest, their sweetest, and you're getting a quality of fresh produce that you cannot get anywhere else, straight from the garden.
There's a trend, isn't there, at the moment, towards eating broad beans young. I mean, I remember when we used to get them and they were really leathery.
Yes, that's how my dad liked them.
Yeah, I think it put
chewy,
a lot of people
chewy
off.
Skin, absolutely, chewy, indigestible skins. Mm. But when they're young, straight out of the pod, like peas, even the very small pods, you could even eat them whole, fry them up. So absolutely, absolutely delicious.
And as you say, they are ready now for picking, aren't they?
They are, and you pick the young pods, and then you get more pods filling out and forming later. So you'll still get a decent crop of large beans, which maybe you're starting to get bored of them by the end of June. So perhaps that's the time to freeze a few for winter use.
Yeah.
I definitely recommend eating veg young and tender, at least a few of them.
So there's not an argument to say, as there is with, say, well, some types of meat, that as they grow older, they actually grow more tasty.
I think that's true with some veg. I mean, particularly like a winter squash. The same will be true for potatoes. The main crop potatoes,
And it's, by the way, still not too late to plant main crop potatoes, because potatoes are pretty fast crop, and I've got a bed here which I'm still
For those who aren't sure about technical terms of potatoes, main crop would, if you put it in now, would be ready what sort of time?
You'd be digging them in September, early October, and then dry them off and get them into store, into paper sacks in the dark somewhere where the mice can't find them. And you should have potatoes. As long as you keep them cool and out of the light, you should have good quality potatoes through to February, March.
Right. Yeah. And early potatoes or new potatoes are just about ready as well.
Time's coming. It's not going to be long now. Here's a row of early potatoes right behind you, Alan. So,
But they're not flowering yet.
No.
And that's a sign that the potatoes are ready, isn't it?
Yes, that's right. Most potatoes don't flower particularly obviously. But if you look carefully, you'll be able to see something like a small flowering head developing.
Yeah,
maybe.
I can't see any buds, actually.
No, neither can I. So I think we'd best wait a week or two on these for this crop before starting to dig. You can always dig one up and have a look.
Yes, of course. Yeah. You know, is there any problem with leaving them for too long?
Yes.
And what's that?
That they're going to be... I mean, that's a good food store that's built up in the ground, so, you know, you can be sure that if you don't have it, something or someone will come along and have it instead. And the particular... Well, I mean, there's all sorts, isn't there? If the ground is wet, then slugs are going to come along and have a go at the tuber. When we get some rain, they're a really good idea to mulch your land, cover it with any organic matter you can get. Leaf mould's the best, but weeds, chopped down green manures, even cardboard covered with the black stuff, the soil conditioner from Amy Sesper.
Well, after it's rained to keep the moisture in.
Well, yes, you want to trap the moisture in the soil, yes. And then this brings several advantages. It's going to retain the moisture around the roots of your crop and reduce evaporation. And it's also going to feed your land as the mulch decomposes. But it's also going to provide habitat for the beetles and the centipedes and everybody else who's hopefully going to eat the slugs.
Those can't always be relied upon.
Well, the slugs are going to hang out under the mulch as well, so it's all got to be in balance, doesn't it? You know, the beetles and the centipedes wouldn't do so well if there weren't some, you know, slugs and other herbivores to eat. So, look out for pests and diseases. I'm always going on about this, but fungal diseases start in June. So have a look on the leaves for fast developing spots and grey spots. And
what do you do?
Remove the affected leaf carefully and dispose of it in the green bin. So it'll go to the hot composting process off-site and prevent spread. But these diseases, once they take hold, they do spread incredibly quickly. So wasps are good, by the way. I've seen quite a few wasps this season already. Wasps aren't really a problem at this time of year. In fact, they're really beneficial because they're going to take aphids and possibly even very small caterpillars. So we've already seen the small white butterfly flying around looking at our brassicas, thinking about laying eggs on there. Well, wasps are going to eat some of the tiny caterpillars.
It's not often wasps get praised, Dave.
Absolutely. Well, I'm speaking up for wasps. I think they're terrific. They're beautiful. And I know they're a hassle in the autumn, and they'll start burrowing into fruit, and they're very if you're, you know, sitting in the pub garden with a sugary drink in September, well, you know, what do you expect? They're going to be there, but now earlier in the season, wasps are a positive benefit. Yes, and they're raising their families, they're feeding their young. They're not bad. They're good.
I think they're malevolent, but anyway.
Well, okay. Maybe you've been stung. It's a long time since I've been stung by a wasp. So carry on sowing and planting crops. As I say, the days are lengthening, so it's not too late. So beetroot, lots of summer brassicas like calabrese and cauliflower and kohlrabi.
So there's time for cauliflower to develop them?
Yes, I mean, even now. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, there's one variety of cauliflower called All the Year Round. So anytime. They often take about a year, so probably think about where you're going to plant it and put it in a good location where it's going to have some rich soil. Cauliflowers are quite heavy feeders. Courgette, if you've got some courgette seeds, stick it in the ground. You know, wet it, and you could still get a late crop of courgettes. Because if you look on the seed packet, and in most gardening books, it'll give you this
sowing window. Mm. And when it says, and this is the earliest and this is the latest time to sow the seeds. But most of these words were written before climate change kicked in and really started to show its effects. So it seems to me more possible than in the past that you might get a late crop if you sow a little bit beyond the recommended sowing or planting window. If you've got the land spare, give it a go. You're not going to lose too much, especially with fast growing things like courgettes. Yes, probably the mid-June's the last time to sow sweet corn. Florence fennel's a good one, but that's probably a late June sowing at the earliest. And then French beans and peas, last sowings of lettuce. There's lots of things can go in now, and there's an awful lot to do. And what with looking out for the pests and keeping things watered, and check on the fruit as well. There's probably some thinning to do on the fruit trees, and that's just as well the days are long.
yes. Right, OK. Well, thanks very much.
Is that OK?
And that was Dave Fox from Trumpington Allotments. And if, like Dave, you're a fan of the broad bean, here's some great ideas for how to use them from Nazima Pathan.
Broad beans. Mm. They're delicious when they're young, but often when you actually get them from a shop, they are rather old, and within the pod itself, the individual beans have developed really quite a tough, leathery skin, and I think that puts a lot of people off the pleasures of broad beans. What can be done?
So if you're not lucky enough to grow your own, as you say, picking them early to be able to enjoy the beans fresh from the pod, then it is a double preparation process. So perhaps that's what puts people off this seasonal and very healthy, nutritious and tasty vegetable. It's something that you'd have to then, once you boil it, you have to then pop them out of their sort of skins, really. It's not difficult in any way. It's a bit like when you want to eat edamame. It's just one of those things. It's easy to do. It's a bit of prep, but then you're rewarded with something that you can has an endless sort of variety of uses.
So you would boil them before popping them out of their skins.
That's what
skins.
I've done. Yes, because it'll soften up the skin to pop it out. Yeah, right. You don't have to, but it'll have you could, for example, if you're going to use it to make a dip, you could probably keep the skin on, but it'll just have a slightly bitterer taste. So
yes,
it's better
it does,
to peel it.
Though bitter is the flavour of the year, I seem to remember you saying. What can you do with broad? Once you've gone through this process, what's your reward? What can you do with them?
What the reward is, broad beans are a lovely green bean. So another green vegetable full of good things. In terms of flavour, it's very creamy but subtle flavour. It's a great base for a variety of strong flavours, from salty things such as anchovies, bacon, to sharp tastes including feta, halloumi cheese, which also is salty, but also lemon and goat cheese. And you can combine it with these very nice summery, to make really nice summery dishes. You could make dips. So sort of we've done a lovely broad bean and feta dip, which is very simple. The boiled broad beans mixed up in a food processor, once shelled and removed from and de-skinned, and then processed them in a food processor with some feta cheese and some mint or other herbs and a bit of lemon juice. And then it's a lovely dip. You could use that as a bruschetta topping with some sun-dried tomatoes, for example. The other thing you can do is even make little fritters with them. So pulverize them again in a food processor with again a bit of lemon and some herbs, create and a bit of flour, make some fritters, and then pan fry those. They'd be great with a yogurt dip. So again, it's that combination of salty, sour or herby flavors that really works well.
Yes, well, they sound delicious. So much more interesting than just boiling them.
I think so. Although, you know, they're not so bad even just boiled. They make a great side dish for main course meats, particularly lamb, which is rich. And so a nice, rather than being bound to having carbohydrates with your Sunday roast, you know, just using some sort of boiled broad beans with a nice herby vinaigrette, for example, or you know, just even in a light gravy with some roast lamb, that would be a really nice meal. You can also make you know, summer minestrone type soup with broad beans and peas and perhaps some green beans and a little bit of pasta in a vegetable minestrone kind of soup. That'd be nice too. So,
yeah. And some of the combinations you mentioned, like for example with anchovies or with bacon or something like that, That would be, therefore, you could put broad beans, what, in a salad with those sorts of things?
Yes, exactly. So, you know, just thinking about what flavours it works well, it's good because it's a good base. It's I want to say bulker, but it's not bulky in flavour. It's light, but it'll be a nice base for all kinds of summery dishes, as well as being very attractive. So if you are going to make a dip, for example, don't pulverise it in the food processor until it's smooth. Let it have some texture, because it does have a nice texture when you eat it too.
I'm beginning to see this as a really quite an underrated vegetable, yeah. One that's been dismissed because we've not treated it well in the past.
Well, I think as we've alluded to, the need for double prepping it probably puts a few people off. But it's one of those things you could do on a weekend and boil some up and then have some, you know, cooked as they are, or leave them to have them in the week cooked as they are with some meat through the week. But at the weekend, you could use it to create dips. It's you know, if you buy it in bulk, something seasonal like this, you could use it in a variety of ways.
And as the season goes on, if you have started off with boiling them, you start to get a bit fed up, but what you're doing is you're providing other means of using them, so you don't get fed up with them.
Well, that's right, and by incorporating different kinds of flavours, sort of sour and salty, or herbs such as mint and also peas, which have that slightly minty flavour, you know, those other flavours will give a bit of variety, and also, you know, sort of could go from region to region. So it can be very British with a roast lamb, for example, but also Italian or Mediterranean with the types of dips and even sort of North African styles with hummuses and spiced yogurts. So, yeah. You know, you can really, by incorporating spices and flavours into ingredients, it stops boredom, I suppose.
Yeah.
Now, we oughtn't overplay the fact that some broad beans can be a bit old, but if they are, you can do the skin removal. It's not always necessary by any means. And those ideas from Nazima Pathan from Franglais Kitchen will be good whatever the vintage of your broad beans. So don't forget, you can visit franglaiskitchen.com for all sorts of good cooking suggestions.
Live, local and all yours. Cambridge 105.
Well, we heard earlier about where you can get good beer from. What about wine? Noel Young Wines in Trumpington is a favourite destination where you can get good wine and good advice. Ella went along to find out about some of their current recommendations.
Noel, could you tell us about some of the Wines of the Month you've got on at the moment?
Yeah, with pleasure. So we've just launched our new Wines of the Month mixed case, and I'll perhaps pick two or three for you to talk about. First one would be a really interesting wine from Sardinia. It's made from the Vermentino grape, and it's called Sessanta Quattro because it comes from vines planted in 1964. So it's an old vines, very low yielding, partly aged in oak, so quite an interesting style. Gives the wine a lovely sort of rich, peachy sort of character, a gentle nutty and gentle herbaceous character. That's very good. That's our most expensive white in our wines at the moment. That's £15.29. And I think probably next to that I'd recommend something a bit more familiar, but actually really, really outstanding example of it. It's the Domaine de Pré-Baron Touraine Sauvignon Blanc 2014 from the Loire Valley. 2014 in Europe is a tricky vintage. Many people might be aware of the rains that hit many of the vineyards. So careful selections is very important. But this is one I found really to be very, very good indeed, for almost Sancerre-like in quality, and £9.29 a bottle, much cheaper. So it's got your classic crisp, herbaceous, gooseberry, citrus flavours, but just with an extra depth, or almost sort of slightly tropical fruits coming in as well. Really, really delicious.
Tropical fruits is unusual for the Loire, I would have thought.
Yeah, it's if you tasted it blind, you might think it was almost a fusion of New Zealand and the Loire. It's got almost that sort of New World ripeness to it, but has that more sort of elegant, crisper, herbaceous characters. Not so, you can tell it's got that, the cool climate bit comes in at the end, so it's a really, really good example. And reds, sport of a choice, but I think I'll talk about the Don David Malbec from El Esteco in Salta in Argentina. This has just won the Malbec Trophy, the International Wine Challenge 2015. We've been carrying their wines for a long time, and they're really, really outstanding and over-deliver. It's from very high-altitude vineyards, so nearly 2,000 metres above sea level. Aged 12 months in new French oak, and it's a fairly classic Malbec. You've got lovely black cherry fruit, hints of chocolate. Lovely sort of barbecue style. You know, if you're having some really nice meat in there, bottle of Don David, don't serve it too warm. Classic mistake with people is they serve big reds too warm. If you chill them down slightly, it makes them much fresher and lighter.
What,
and
about, say, 16, something like 16,
17, that's how I tend to serve mine, yeah. I think it makes a huge difference. You don't notice the alcohol, and it freshens up the fruit and makes the whole thing a lot more attractive.
And that would go well with the barbecue.
Absolutely fantastic, yeah, yeah. So yeah. You've got really nice, get yourself a nice piece of steak, don't overdo it, with your Don David Malbec. You'd be very happy.
Right. And Argentinian wines are generally very good value for money.
Yes, and this is not cheap, but it's £10.75. But I think you really do notice it. So from the sort of cheaper Malbecs around the £6-7 mark don't have the same depth and richness this wine has. And I think because it's the high altitude vineyards, it means it retains quite good acidity. It's not just about being big and powerful. There is some elegance there as well. So I think it's a cracking drink for the money.
Right, that's excellent. Well, thanks very much, Noel. Thanks.
You're welcome.
Yeah, thanks to Noel Young. The wines are, in my best accent, Domaine du Pré Baron Sauvignon de Touraine, 2014, that's £9.25. Podere Papignolo Verminiento de Sardegna 64, 2013, £15.29. I'm impressing myself. They're both white wines, and the red wine was El Esteco Don David Malbec Reserve, 2013. That's £10.99. Noel Young Wines is at 56 High Street, Trumpington, next to the petrol station. On to the food and drink news now. There's no Gigi Perry to bring us the university news, but we do have plenty from the city, including the Plough at Cotton, which has been taken over by Don Casquari and reopened today.
As we mentioned earlier, you can now get Calverley's beer straight from their brewery. It's open every Saturday from 11 a.m. until 4 p.m, and you can find them at 23A Hooper Street.
Inda's Kitchen's frozen food range is now available at the Larder Burwash Manor in Barton.
You can now find Jack's Gelato at Urban Larder, and he's scooping now at Nord as well, serving an allotment rhubarb ripple.
And last week you heard Ascara of Rhode Island talking about a future pop-up with Gogo Goji Gui and Korean-inspired cocktails. Well, that will be happening next Wednesday the 17th. Starts 12 till 2 and then resumes 5 to 7. Booking is advisable though, so visit rhodeislanduk.com for more details.
Wasabi will be opening on Pedicurie next Thursday the 18th at midday.
And remember that Annabelle and Jamie of Cam Events are having another pop-up. This time it's a Spanish tapas and wines, matching wines, evening with Tapas Azar, where you can find on the market on Sundays with his Spanish goods. That's on the 26th of June, 7:45 till 10 p.m. at Sticky Beaks in Hobson Street. You can book your table and find more information about the menu from Eventbrite. And another note, a lot of their wines are available from Noel Young Wines.
And finally, Food Park Night Market will once again take over the stunning venue at Gravel Hill Farm from 5 p.m. until 10 p.m. on Saturday the 4th of July. Tickets go on sale next week, but be sure to get in there quick. They sold out in days back in May. Check foodparkcam.com for more details.
Which brings us rapping on the doors of another edition of Flavour. We'll be repeated tomorrow at 7 a.m. and the podcast should be available by Tuesday, which you'll be able to find on the Cambridge 105 website, along with all of our previous editions.
You can also subscribe to Flavour on iTunes and find us on the Radio Player app. Remember too that you can keep in touch with Cambridge Food and Drink News by following Flavour on Twitter at Flavour105.
Coming up next is Bookmark, whose guest this week is Liz Fraser, author of The Guides to Surviving Parenthood and Families.
From 2 until 5, it's Summer Saturday, broadcasting live from the Town and Country Show on Parker's Peace, as well as the Buskers and Street Performers Festival.
At 5, it's Radio Dante, the programme for Italians in Cambridge. 30 minutes in English, 30 minutes Italian. Then, at 6 p.m, it's Jason Allen with more music from the 80s and 90s.
So a huge thanks to all of our interviews today, and thank you for listening. Our next episode is in 2 weeks' time, on Saturday the 27th of June. So for now, it's goodbye from Flavour.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.